From WJCT in Jacksonville, this is Redux. I'm your host, Vince Kong, bringing you our weekly news magazine, and this is episode 6. It's Friday, September 30th. Since 1999, the number of overdose deaths involving opioids have nearly quadrupled, prompting the Obama administration to launch a week-long blitz on the addiction crisis with new initiatives while calling on Congress to fund the $1.1 billion effort. On this episode of Redux, we take a look at the opioid epidemic here on the First Coast and why for some addicts, wanting to get clean and asking for help isn't enough. Later in the show, we look at the building hailed as Florida's first skyscraper, the Barnett Tower. While it's been vacant since the early 1990s, the renovation of this historic building may just hold the key to revitalizing Jacksonville's downtown. And finally, we've got sea turtles. But first, the Jacksonville City Council has approved its annual budget, and we have all the details for you coming up. Stay tuned. This past week, the Jacksonville City Council approved a budget of more than $1 billion. Included in the budget, the city will hire 40 new police officers and 40 new public safety officers and fund a Jacksonville Sheriff's Office body camera pilot program. A last-minute tweak to the budget uses about $100,000 left over from last year's property appraiser's budget for taking aerial pictures of the city. Appraiser Jerry Holland says these photos are taken every couple years.
We can actually see the size of the home, see if the size has changed, see if the homeowner has made any additions to it without a permit or taken any buildings down. And actually, part of this funding actually will be a computer process that will actually match aerials from one year to the other and tell us which ones have been changed.
The council also approved amendments totaling $45,000 from a contingency fund, including money for 1,000 kids to get swimming lessons. Councilman Aaron Bowman, while supporting the amendments, said this.
I just wanted the council as a whole to realize that we haven't started the fiscal year yet, and we just cut our contingency almost in half. And that's the issue for me.
Meanwhile, not all council priorities were able to be funded. More than a quarter of the budget is going towards paying down pension debt. Mayor Lenny Curry says that's why more dollars can't go towards sidewalks, downtown development, or increased library hours. The budget takes effect Saturday, pending Curry's signature, which is scheduled for sometime today. For updates, visit wjctnews.org. Drug overdose deaths from opioids are on the rise in Jacksonville. In the first part of this year, first responders have administered as much anti-overdose medication in the first quarter as they do in a typical calendar year. And while heroin might be listed as the cause of death on the coroner's report, some experts maintain that heroin isn't the drug to blame. WJCT's Lindsay Kilbride has the story.
People are dying from heroin laced with a synthetic painkiller called fentanyl. It's nearly 60 times more potent than heroin.
And these drug manufacturers and dealers, they're cutting synthetic fentanyl with heroin. And so it's cheaper to manufacture and it's much quicker to produce than heroin.
Jacksonville Rescue Division Chief David Castleman says the medical examiner's office alerted his team this year that most heroin deaths were actually death by fentanyl.
We've had numerous cases that we've responded to where the individual was using drugs alone, and we found them dead with the needle still in their arm. That's how quickly that drug acts.
He says most drug users don't know what they're getting isn't pure. In response, the rescue department is stocking more of its vehicles with Narcan. Now all advanced life support engines carry it, and Castleman says he'd like all rescue vehicles to keep a supply. Lindsay Kilbride, WJCT News.
For those addicted to prescription pain pills and other opioids, there's now another option for treatment. Recently, the Federal Food and Drug Administration approved a new implant to treat addiction. The medication blocks brain receptors that drive powerful addictions to these pills. But as WJCT's Ryan Bank reports, not everyone in Jacksonville is praising the decision. Some in law enforcement and healthcare see medication-assisted treatment as just substituting one addiction for another.
It's already 90 degrees by the time Erin Bolger begins pressure washing her first house of the day. With a couple of employees, she's busy this time of year, cleaning homes and landscaping suburban yards in Fleming Island. She says this type of success was inconceivable just a year ago.
I became, I guess a manipulator. Once my medications ran out, I looked for them through, in schools, friends. And then it started becoming a theft thing where I would look into my friend's parents' medicine cabinets.
After a military training accident left Bolger in chronic agony, prescription pain pills became her drug of choice, on top of an existing alcohol problem. Until one day, she had a run-in with the law.
I got into some trouble driving a vehicle, having my prescriptions along with prescriptions that weren't for me.
After a jail stint, Bolger says she knew she needed to get help, and a doctor's ad convinced her to call.
Amit Vijapurav, MD, board-certified addiction specialist and psychiatrist.
Vijapurav is at the forefront of medication-assisted addiction treatment in Jacksonville. In January, he enrolled her in an experimental drug trial using injections of a medicine called buprenorphine. Each injection controls Erin's opioid cravings for a month, and she gets weekly counseling to tackle the underlying causes of addiction. In addition to the injection trials, Vijapurav also pioneered the use of the newly approved buprenorphine implant, which lasts for 6 months.
So I'm opening an implant that came in the box, and it comes in a secured box. It comes with all the tools that is needed to do the implant procedure. The implant is about 1 inch long. And
oh, wow.
and very, very small. It's about the needle size.
Vijapurav says he hasn't had a single patient relapse while using the medication.
Addiction happens to people who have a genetic susceptibility. They have a brain chemical imbalance. So by using medication similar like opioid but does not cause any addiction, we are able to protect them from any further abuse of opioid as well as craving.
Not all addiction specialists agree, though. Lakeview Health CEO Roy Serpa thinks only abstinence is acceptable.
We believe that's just replacing some other drugs for another drug.
Right.
That's the way we think about it.
And Serpa isn't alone. Local law enforcement officials are skeptical, too. In Erin Bolger's case, when she tried to avoid penalties by using drug court, she tested positive for buprenorphine and was told to discontinue treatment or get booted from the program. Richard Gordon, who oversees Clay and Duval County's drug court, says there's a very good reason for that.
The state of the testing now will show that they have either methadone or buprenorphine has been used, but it won't show whether it's used as prescribed or abuse.
Although less potent than opioids, buprenorphine treats pain, and Gordon says that means it can still be abused for a high. The National Association of Drug Court Professionals is coming around to the idea of allowing the medication, but until testing catches up to treatment, Gordon says his circuit's drug courts won't accept people who use it.
Now, Ryan Bank continues the report. As more people become addicted, President Barack Obama is asking Congress to pass $1.1 billion in new treatment funding. That's because getting connected to treatment can be as difficult for struggling addicts as deciding to seek help in the first place.
Rural Clay County resident Joan says she's tried everything to find stable help for her daughter, who's suffering with heroin and opioid addiction. She doesn't want her last name used because she's afraid of drug dealers. Once, she got so desperate, she petitioned a court to take her daughter into treatment involuntarily.
I tried going through the mental health court, trying to do the Marchman Act. I tried that a couple of times. She could never get served. So that never, so she was never brought to court because of that.
When her daughter's boyfriend died from an overdose, Joan began a 3-year quest to find suitable treatment. But she quickly realized there weren't many options. She could put her daughter in an inpatient abstinence-only program or wait weeks for a slot with a psychiatrist who may or may not be an addiction specialist.
And in rural area, it's very difficult to even have a psychiatric coverage, and addiction is even a smaller coverage. compared to the psychiatry.
What are the Northeast Florida doctors who are board certified to provide medication-assisted addiction treatment is Jacksonville doctor Amit Vijapura.
Me and other colleagues in the area, it's about 2 weeks waiting time for anybody to get in.
An index created by healthcare consulting group Advocates for Human Potential found Florida has just 20 counselors, social workers, psychologists, and psychiatrists for every 1,000 addicts. That's the fifth worst ratio in the country. Vijapura says even if a patient breaks through the access barrier, paying for long-term treatment can be nearly impossible. And Joan agrees. Her daughter is in rehab now, but insurance won't pay for continued treatment after that, she says. Ryan Bank, WJCT News.
And now to shift gears. Jaguars owner Shad Khan recently took control of the historic Barnett Tower in downtown Jacksonville, ending a 7-year effort by developer Steve Atkins to renovate the building. WJCT business analyst John Burr talked with another previous developer of the Barnett Tower, Mike Langton, and tells news director Jessica Palumbo what Langton thinks could save the renovation project as well as help revitalize downtown Jacksonville.
John, we've talked about the Barnett Tower before on the Business Brief. Remind us again, what is this property?
It's at the southwest corner of Laura and Adams Street. It opened in 1926. At the time, it was hailed as Florida's first skyscraper. It was the headquarters of Barnett Bank, a statewide banking powerhouse until it was bought out by Nations Bank in the late 1990s.
And it's been vacant since the early 90s.
It has, and there have been several attempts to renovate the building. All of them have failed. I spoke with Mike Langton. He successfully renovated historic buildings in downtown. And for a time in the early 2000s, he controlled the Barnett Tower.
Okay.
Langton thinks the most viable plan is to have that bottom of floor of the building as retail, like a restaurant or a bank, with the upper floors as rental apartments.
And currently, there is 3 residential apartment buildings in downtown. They're full and have been full, as I said, for the last 2 or 3 years. That's the 11E and the Carling and my building, the WA9 building on Adams Street. So there's clearly more demand.
We've heard a lot of people calling for more residential use downtown. What is he saying needs to happen for that to really kick off?
Well, the city has to get involved in a real way. And on this property, frankly, they haven't. Langton would like to see a parking garage built on city land near Forsyth Street. That would serve the residents of this tower. The payoff for renovating that tower, and there's 3 other historic buildings adjacent, would be huge for downtown redevelopment, he said.
Because there's nothing better than he could do as mayor than to cause something to happen in that group of buildings at that spot of our downtown. It's the heart of our downtown.
But John, we've seen this all before with the Barnett Tower, failure after failure. So what will it finally take this time to make it work?
That's an excellent question. Now, Langton is not really sure, but he thinks a good first step would be,
you know, maybe the mayor or the DIA could call everybody in and sit everybody out at the table. Mr. Khan's representative, ask me because of my advice and involvement in the buildings, Mr. Atkins and all his team, get us all at the table and say, okay, how can we make all this happen? How can we collectively put it all together? Maybe that's what it's going to take at this point.
What about the Laura Street Trio? Those are historic buildings nearby?
Right next door, really. Again, that's really unclear. Steve Atkins controls them. But Langton says if they're not renovated in the near future,
or you need to tear them down because they're a hindrance to redevelopment.
WJCT business analyst John Burr talked with Mike Langton, who has developed historic buildings in downtown Jacksonville. I'm WJCT News Director Jessica Palumbo.
For the final story of the podcast, we promised you sea turtles. Contributor Allie George brings you a story from the Sea Turtle Hospital at the Whitney Laboratory just south of St. Augustine. Since it opened its doors late last year, it served around 100 patients suffering from ailments, including boat strikes and fishing line entanglements. But don't worry, the accidents in this piece all have a happy ending, so please enjoy.
Last month, a small crowd gathered on the beach below the iconic stripes of St. Augustine's lighthouse.
I guess it was supposed to be a fun and easy release date where we could come to the lighthouse boat ramp and release Mud Pie, which was a turtle we had since March.
Sea Turtle Hospital Program Coordinator Catherine Eastman says Mud Pie's launch did go smoothly. A pair of researchers carried the turtle into the open water. When it poked its head above the surface, the crowd cheered. But just minutes earlier, a fisherman accidentally hooked another turtle on the same pier. Sometimes hooks can snag turtles' flippers, and those are easy to remove.
Not the case. He actually swallowed the hook, and you could still see it, but it was pretty far down there. So I guess luckily we were there at the right time.
With Mud Pie's tank now available, the turtle, soon to be named Salty, began its journey to recovery.
So we have four big tanks, and some of them are subdivided. So
inside the turtle hospital, tanks receive water directly from the ocean, but they must be cleaned regularly and monitored carefully. Volunteers like Madison Skidmore help keep the recovery environment clean.
And then I test the temperature to make sure it's a comfortable temperature for our turtles. And then I test the pH and the ozone. And then if everything's shipshape, then we start the rest of our day.
Well, let me take you in to see the treatment room.
The hospital was built to care for a rising number of turtles with tumors growing on their skin. Although they're benign, they can affect the turtles' ability to see, swim, or dig nests. The tumor-causing disease was common in South Florida, but it's still new in these waters.
The disease is moving more northward. We have, you know, advancing of mangroves in more northern regions than ever before. So, you know, chalk this one up to climate change.
Before this place was built, volunteers would have to drive sick or injured turtles to special hospitals as far away as Boca Raton, Clearwater, or even Marathon in the Florida Keys.
When you're really looking at the numbers, we're not making a huge impact on the population, but I think what we can learn while we have them is the way we're going to impact the population.
She says the Sea Turtle Hospital has helped raise awareness in the local community. As animal care manager Rachel Thomas puts it,
everybody can help turtles. Everybody can make a difference for our planet and all the animals on it.
For boaters and fishers wondering how to do their part, hospital staff encourage them to immediately contact state fish and wildlife officials if they see a turtle they suspect is injured. Allie George, WJCT News.
And that's our show. You can find all of our audio and web stories at wjctnews.org. You can also stream this podcast as well as all of our on-air content on the WJCT app, which is available on iTunes and the Google Play Store. And of course, find us on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe. Relax Radio presents a wide variety of music that creates an easy listening sound for baby boomers and for a wider audience as well. Now streaming online 24/7 on wjct.org/relax. And you can also listen anytime on WJCT HD3 and anywhere through the WJCT app. It's also available 7 nights a week at midnight on 89.9 FM in Jacksonville. Here's a sample of what you'll find when you tune in.
Over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I've heard of, once in a lullaby, somewhere over the through the sunset in your eyes, juggling the train through clear Moroccan skies. Ducks and pigs and chickens call, animal carpet wall to wall, American ladies 5 foot tall and blue, sweeping cobwebs from the edges of my mind. Had to get away to see what we could find. Hope the days are by the head.
Never know how much I love you. Never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me,
I get a fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight. Fever in the morning, fever all through the night.
I won't pretend that I intend to stop living.
And that concludes Redux from WJCT News. I'm Vince Kong. Thank you for listening.